I don't get many bills in my regular surface mail anymore. My utilities like phone, electric, and water are taken care of electronically. But that doesn't mean I don't get a lot of mail. I'm usually at home when I hear it drop heavily from the mail slot to the floor. A good portion of that mail comes from charitable organizations asking for financial support. In scanning the envelopes, I would say that practically all are from reputable and worthy sources. They're all doing good works, and each of them is undoubtedly someone's favorite charity. Several of them have overlapping goals, but again, each is nuanced differently from the others. For the most part, I am emotionally allied to all of them, but from a practical standpoint, I am unable to financially support all of them. It's hard to say no to these organizations that seek cures to the virulent diseases that beset humankind. Parenthetically, I must say that these research organizations ought to be funded by the federal government through our taxes, but that's a subject for another day. Right now, the only source of funds is from you and me. Added to the paper mail list are the numerous phone solicitations from worthwhile organizations, not the commercial companies who use auto dialers and violate the federal do not call law. I respond to the legitimate charities' calls politely, but firmly, telling them I will not make any commitments by phone and ask that they not solicit me that way again. But back to the mail. There are some envelopes I discard without opening. They include most political solicitations and a few charities which, while worthwhile, I cannot justify spending even a small portion of my budget. Good causes, no doubt. But like most of us, I'm forced to prioritize my giving. Other envelopes I open and check to see if I've already donated to them. In many cases, upon receipt of my donation, rather than acknowledge it, a request for further funds is promptly sent. Once I've checked off the above two categories, I look at what's left. In the first month or so of the year, there's a lot. That's when I clean the slate and start over. By mid-year, most of my giving is done. Some of these charities seem to feel that whatever I am able to give is not enough. I cannot tithe to them. I do what I can. But then the ones I give to change from time to time. I resent it when I get envelopes with bold red letters saying, second request, or please favor us with the courtesy of a response. Usually these are charities I've already contributed to, but they, probably due to their automated response mechanisms, just fail to acknowledge my donations. Two of or three of these episodes like that generally cause me to find another cause to support, not because I don't believe in the one, but rather because I don't appreciate being harped on constantly. It's no way to treat friends. It's a way to alienate them. I find that in everyday life, too, there exist choices. There's a myriad of good causes. We UUs support many of them. I sometimes get annoyed by the almost daily mailings I get from the various UU entities, yet I do make those my priorities. Being single-minded in purpose can be a positive thing. People with driving passions can change the world. They can also become annoying when they see that world as a narrow, single-issue entity to the exclusion of all else. We UUs are not immune from this all-or-nothing syndrome. In many instances, we all start out from the same motivation. We believe in a cause. It is good. It is right. It is in full accord with our stated Unitarian Universalist principles. We declare our commitment to the issue. But all too often, rather than take that commitment to those outside the sphere of this church, we UUs don't do proselytizing very well. So instead, we demand more and more from those within the safe confines of these walls. We demand daily reinforcement from from the rest to prove our commitment. How may we prove our allegiance? That sometimes feels to me like asking a parent to name his or her favorite child. And any parent who does that is probably sick. Is proving my commitment to your priority once a week enough? Every day? Is it requested that I erase all other good works from my consciousness? Should it overshadow every other thought or priority in my life? Is there any room for my passions? Or must yours be placed in front of mine in order that I prove my friendship? And then, finally, it goes over the top. Not only must this be a priority to some, it must become the priority of all. Not a priority, the priority. And if it isn't one's top priority, then you don't matter at all. Forsake all others. Yours is not worth pursuing. Mine is important. It sounds like something one might expect to hear at a fundamentalist church or mosque. It says, my way is the only way. Your issues must be secondary to mine. Nothing else matters. In a less intense way, of course, that's the same philosophy that prods teenagers to strap on a bomb and go forth into a crowd. I know that most of us here today have issues that we all support, concerns that we all share. But let's not insist that they be ranked in order that you or I select. Our hearts are big enough to embrace more than one cause at a time. And how we rank them on an individual basis is a determination that only each of us can make for ourselves. And that individual ranking is for individuals to make, but without insisting that those of others be identical. And if you can't respect the priorities of others, you may, by the very sheer negative insistent force of your personality, turn them away from yours. Not the validity of it, but of a willingness to expend their efforts on its noble goals. There are many injustices I must confront. Racism is still a cancer upon our country. Just listen to the underlying thrust of the criticism of everything our president does or says. And anyone who thinks electing our first black president ended racism in this country just isn't listening. Sexism may be on the way out, but it isn't gone yet by a far cry, not in the workplaces of America. And aside from the corporations that employ people, so very many of our governmental policies belie equal opportunity. And when General Motors named a woman as chief executive, does anyone believe that that one act ended sex discrimination in the corporate world? Really? Ethnic stereotypes are still part of what is loosely defined as humor in parts of this country. And any statement regarding a racial or ethnic group that starts with the words, they all, is by definition biased. Economic unfairness is not only still with us, it is growing year by year. Money in politics is destroying the middle class in this country. Hunger and starvation exist, and it affects every group on this planet. Environmental disaster is already upon us, and little is being done to reverse it. And while Thurgood Marshall and Sandra Day O'Connor shattered the U.S. Supreme Court's tradition of only white males, and the magnificent voice of Marian Anderson made even the daughters of the American Revolution wake up, and Arthur Ashe and Althea Gibson integrated professional tennis, and the White House is occupied by an African American, anyone who thinks that the struggle for racial and gender equality is something of the past and is no longer relevant is either delusional, wearing blinders, or both. I watched the recent movie celebrating the life and absolute courage of the baseball player Jackie Robinson. His heroic, successful effort to integrate what we always had called America's pastime. And honoring a pioneer who spent 2 years trying to contain his rage against the bigotry shown to him doesn't dishonor those who fight for other civil rights issues. But there are some who thought the movie shouldn't have been made because it is no longer a relevant issue. It is time to put the past behind us and that the film somehow detracts from other injustices. I can't imagine a more narrow, historically tone-deaf attitude. Those who ignore the past are doomed to relive it. Have we become so obsessed with our individual struggles that we must relegate all others to a lesser strata? To me, the most important issue in this world confronts is global climate change. The mechanisms to end life on our planet are already in motion, and money and greed are fueling it. And while this may not be your individual number one cause, let it at least be one you can support. There is no insistence that you exclude all other priorities. They're important, no doubt. Civil rights, whether based on race, religion, sex, or sexual orientation, are all extremely important and unfortunately are still very relevant and very pertinent. But if this planet is destroyed in a cloud of noxious fumes because the permafrost ice which now contains the toxins melts, it won't matter if you're black or brown, yellow or white, whether you're a believer or an atheist, if you're gay, straight, bisexual, transgender, male, female, liberal, conservative, libertarian, or communist. You and your children and your pets and your plants will finally have something in common. You'll all perish in the worldwide global gas chamber we are allowing to be constructed as we watch, ignore, refute, or just plain refuse to consider as the ultimate results of our inaction. As an Australian friend of mine once phrased in a different issue, let's just put it in the too hard drawer. Having said that, I cannot demand, nor should I expect, that you must make a choice as to my cause usurping your cause. Conversely, please don't expect me to acquiesce as to its relative unimportance. I agree, yours is important. And how you rank mine is important to you is beyond my powers to change, and it would be both presumptuous and self-righteous, not to mention futile, waste of time, yours and mine, if I tried to do so. There are reasons you have come to your conclusions. Hopefully, they are ones in which I am able to share a certain measure of my own devotion. Are you willing to accept that my priorities may be equally influenced by my experience? They, too, are deeply felt. Of course, there are exceptions. If more water for private golf courses is your passion, you can count me out. Putting more gambling casinos in disadvantaged neighborhoods isn't something I can get behind. But for the most part, I think that the people who share this chosen faith have shown a special social consciousness and on issues of humanity. I feel there is enough space, if not in my wallet, then in my heart, to devote some of my limited energies and resources to cover a wide swath. And if I get to the point where only a single issue is of any import to me, it would be wise for me to step back and consider the consequences if all other priorities were set aside and forgotten. Not a fate we want. If for no other reason than how all these causes are part of one socially responsible fabric, and when any part of that foundation begins to falter, it's only a matter of time before mine, too, buckles and crumbles. If you want me to support you in your passions, don't, please don't, either deride mine or give me ultimatums. My daughter and her husband are strict vegetarians. They even refuse to wear leather shoes, and they are consistent. They're consistent in their devotion to the animal world. But when they visit our house, they do not seek to redo our pantry or our refrigerator. Of course, we always make certain that their dietary restrictions are honored, and at the same time, the carnivores in attendance are also accommodated. There is mutual respect and understanding at these meals, and when visiting my daughter, I certainly don't expect to be served steak and lobster. I get that they are committed to the dietary preferences their conscience has dictated. And in both homes, no one starves. One can hold heartfelt passion for a noble cause without demanding the complete adherence of all others. Your favorite crusade is important to me, too. But if you need me to forsake what I think is paramount, if you demand my full attention and efforts, if, as a recent U.S. president declared, either you are with us or you are against us, if you charge me at all or nothing, my answer will inevitably be nothing. Because you're asking me to agree that mine must stand secondarily to yours. And that negative answer will not advance your cause. And while I will still believe yours to be a worthy cause, your ultimatum will convert me from an active participant into a sympathetic bystander. The demand that I spend every waking moment on it, and I need to prove my allegiance constantly, unfortunately lowers the issue as to the time and effort I will spend on it. You have inadvertently caused me to merge your exclusive vision and the issue you support. Both sides of this religious heritage we are based upon the concept of unity, oneness. So much of what we seek to change in the world is based on principles of exclusivity. Religions that demand full and complete obedience and observation upon pain of death, corporations that believe the earth is theirs to plunder, political entities that make the process of governing one of personal hatred rather than universal betterment. There are department stores and there are boutiques. When one is looking for a specific item and it is narrowly focused on it, a boutique is the place to go. It's more likely you'll find what you're looking for there. And all the salespeople are keyed in exclusively on your quest. And it's likely to be much less crowded than the department store. But if you aren't sure, or if you have many items to search for, you'll brave the department store crowds. You won't find the overall focus on one item. But as you get to the proper department, the salespeople in it will have at least a modicum of knowledge on your quest. The department store will be a lot more crowded and immensely more diverse in both items and, much more importantly, in people. There won't be many single-issue shoppers in a department store. If this UU faith of ours is to grow, it needs to adopt the multiple agenda department store model. There aren't enough single-issue boutiques, and being in the one doesn't preclude us from being in another. Negative factors, hate, bigotry, and self-righteousness are the hallmarks of many organizations, religious and otherwise, which we claim to abhor. But do we sometimes, in fact, embrace those very characteristics for our own set of truths? We, as a small minority within the vast religious landscape, have the potential ability to put our own biases and exclusivity to bear. And when we place ourselves in the heady position of being morally superior, regardless of the merits of our delusions, we embrace the tactics of those whose methods we decry. Tolerance, forbearing, and loyalty are two-way streets. The human spirit is capable of both giving and receiving in each lane of those streets. It is sometimes easier to receive than to give loyalty, tolerance, and forbearance, much easier to receive than to give. But the failure to use both sides of that street can only lead to a sign which reads, dead end. May it be so. Thank you.